Welcome to Hollywood and Horsepower, the show about the story behind the story. Today we are joined by a very special guest, Doug Richart, and I apologize, Doug, if I butchered your name. You'll have to correct me. Doug is an amazing guy. He's got a tremendous story. Crew chief of NASCAR, started out in dirt racing, probably most well-known for being Dale Earnhardt Sr.'s crew chief, at least, you know, among Dale Earnhardt Sr. fans. I'm sure there's a lot of other fans that know Doug for many other things. But, Doug, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to finally make it on here. I know we've been working for a long time to make this happen.
I really appreciate you even joining me. And correct me so I know, how do you pronounce your name?
It's Richart.
Okay.
You pronounce the R-I-C-H and then the ERT, E-R-T.
Okay, perfect. I apologize. So, Richart. And
no problem.
It is an honor to have you join us. You know, I know what the history says about you, but what our show is we try to bring things that people might not know about you. So we all know what the history books say. We know what Wikipedia, what NASCAR, everybody else writes down. What I'd like to do is go back to where you started. And I believe you had an interest in dirt racing in the beginning.
Well, when we lived in the neighborhood there, and it was in Saratoga, California, and there was a group of us that all kind of, you know, the local neighborhood guys all gathered in Ken Neighbor's garage. And he was into figure eight racing and stuff. So we started going down there, hanging out with him. And of course, one thing led to another. And the next thing we know, we're going to the track and we're helping him put cars together and do all that. So that was where the dirt racing part of it came in, you know, more from just the mechanical side. But as that progressed along, one of my friends started dating a girl in high school, and it just so happened to be Rod Osterlund's daughter.
So the
connection was, I guess, any kind of normal connection. This one just led to a path of NASCAR racing.
And that was what took you to Charlotte.
Yeah. Yeah. Once they met, and then there was another key element in the whole thing too, and that was Roland Walonica. Everybody knows Roland from out here being the general manager and, you know, the manager of the team and doing all that. Well, Roland had been laying carpet and stuff for Rod Osterlund's construction projects. So that, and he also ran a modified at San Jose Speedway. So the whole thing kind of just circled around and kind of encompassed, you know, all these people's players, and everybody decided that they wanted to go racing. So a little of Roland Walonica and Rod talking about it, and then getting involved with Jeff Prescott was the one that dated Lana, was her name, and kind of swirled around and said, okay, we're going to start a team. And that's really how it happened. We ended up buying our first car was one of Lenny Pond's old cars. It was a number 54. I think it had Pepsi on the side of it or something like that. We got that. We worked with it. Roland was a motor guy, you know, for his modified and stuff like that. So he started building a motor right there in a little stand. And finally we had to have a hauler. So we bought a empty moving van, 53-foot hauler trailer, and then Roland and his dad designed the mechanical aspect of the ramps at the time. And when they designed it, we designed it to haul two cars. And that hauler was the first two-car hauler on the circuit at the time.
Oh, wow.
So we put all that together. You know, we built the ramps and welded and cable systems. It's not like the elevator style like we all know now in racing, but it was a ramp that you pulled the car up on the ramp, and then the ramp came up, flattened out. put a crossbar in it, and then you load the car, other car right underneath it. But as far as the cabinets and all that stuff in the trailer, we sat there and heli-arced nuts into the frame, the metal framework of the trailer, to where we could bolt our cabinets up on the wall. You know, and of course, hard to heli-arc, you know, working up on a wall, but, you know, Roland was up there with the rod and the handle for the heli-arc, and I was down on the floor pushing the pedal, and he would say, okay, a little more, okay, you know. that was our by-wire throttle system now, like we all know.
Wow. That's amazing. So you literally
That was kind of the start of everything, you know. It's just that's really how everything started to become like, we're going to go racing. And then, of course, you know, when we got the truck done, we got a car ready. And I think we went to Ontario. Roland Wolodka was the driver. And we went there. Oh, gosh. We didn't end up very good. I think something happened to our motor or something like that. And, you know, our first outing wasn't real spectacular, but, you know, we continued to work on it like everybody. And then we ended up moving east.
What year was this? Like, what year was the first year you really went racing?
Well, we came out here I think it was 77.
Okay.
1977. And that's when we made the trip, because I remember turning 17 driving through Texas. So I was born in 60, so that was a break then. 6 and 7, you know, right there is when we came out here, and gosh, I've been back here since.
That's amazing. I mean, you talk about timing. I mean, to be at 17 going into NASCAR and then, you know, with some of the top people by a lot of people's estimation before you're even 20 is just amazing.
Yeah, I know. I was, you know, leaving home so early, there was some, you know, medical concerns and stuff, you know, me being on my own at an underage person, you know, my mom had to create this letter and have it notarized and all that stuff just so that Roland Wolodka
somebody could help you if they needed to. Yeah.
Right. They had
stuff
the medical.
That you don't think about.
Yeah. And I have that letter on my refrigerator right now. It's still sitting there.
So who were the guys that really inspired you? Like, who were the guys you looked up to back then that really made you want to chase this dream?
Well, I think all the old school guys, the Richard Petty, K.O. Yarbrough, David Pearson, Buddy Baker, Benny Parson. And I worked with about every one of those I just mentioned. I ended up working.
I was just going to say, it had to be almost surreal for you when a few years later you're standing in the garage looking at these people.
Yeah, I remember some days, and, you know, Richard Petty's always, you know, he's the king.
Sure.
Well, one of the trips when we were at Darlington, you know, we had a thing where we like to make contact with the wall there. And we did several times. And
leave your mark, so to say.
Yeah, you know, you gotta, we're trying to earn our stripes.
Yeah.
So as we'd hit the wall and we'd bend the tailpipes, and eventually, you know, I had to sit there and try to weld them back together. And I just remember one day I'm at the hauler, and all I had then was an oxyacetylene torch. And here comes Richard Petty. He says, son, can I give you a hand? And I was like, well, I don't know. But, you know, he was just a nice guy. I just wanted to help.
I was going to say, one of the nicest families in racing. And I mean, nicest guy, but I
still is.
Asked him. His son is, you know, Kyle's amazing. The whole family is just the nicest people.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was good.
And, you know, you touched on that, and that is something that, you know, I raced SCCA for many years, like 21 years. And that's something that's always impressed me about racing is that as a whole, I've seen guys take parts off their cars to let somebody else have it to keep them going.
Yeah, and I got a funny story about that. So here lately, I've been working with a guy named Dana Blackhurst and his wife, Jan. And his nonprofit is he runs a school for dyslexic kids in Greenville, South Carolina. It's called the Chandler School. So I got involved with him and, you know, and he wanted me to get involved with the kids. So I started doing, I kind of took over the ACE program, which is the automotive side of the school. And what we do is we take kids, you know, between like 6th, 7th, graders, things like that. And then we'll take them to the track and we kind of take learning, you know, everybody's got the learning disabilities or how they function and what they need to be able to do their math and do those things properly. And Dana is great with these kids as far as figuring out what they need to know. So we've got a group of kids that we actually take to the track. And when we go to the track, they're doing air pressure. They're figuring the air splits and builds and they're running the radios. They're jacking it up. They're changing the tires. And I just have them do all the stuff we can. And it kind of is just a different way to learn because a lot of racing is math. It is equations. Yeah. You have to deal with situations that are unplanned and things. And it really gets you out in the world to help make those decisions. And it's very fun.
Before we get off it, how can people find this school if they want to help?
You know, the Chandler School, I think you can just look it up online.
What's
it should be chandlerschool.com or something.
Chandlerschool.com?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll
find it and we'll put it up on Instagram under Hollywood and Horsepower's page. We always like to support, you know, we supported a lot of different nonprofits and anything like that. I know Ray Abraham does a lot with the Autistic Society and, you know, we support that and we support No Fallen Heroes. So we're more than happy to help, you know, push Danny.
Right. Well, that's great because, you know, we have a lot of good people, neat people involved with the program, but you know, everybody, the response from the parents and things like that, they're saying, man, that's really great what you're doing and blah, blah, blah. And it's satisfying. You know, I've worked with people a lot in my whole career, but now it's almost twofold, right? I remember starting
another
and
level.
I got all the help from the Richard Petties and all, so. But
well,
where
I
was going with
this. Racing has always been, and I'm not bashing. I mean, I'm not trying to talk old versus new, but I feel like, and I hope it still goes on today, but I feel like there was always people willing to give advice, lend a hand, even for somebody they might be competing against. And I always thought that was a cool part of racing, just in general.
Right.
You know, I've always liked that. It is, you know, to your point, though, about how people learn. Don't you wish back in school they would have said in geometry and algebra, hey, if you're ever interested in race cars, you're going to need to know this, and this will apply. I don't think I would have slept through as many of those classes if they'd have said that. You know, I think that they should tell kids, hey, you know what? If you pay attention, you might be able to be a crew chief at some point.
That's right. Yeah, you never know. It's like, you don't ever plan your path, But where I went with this story with the kids, I wanted to just tell you that because when we were at VIR, we had an issue with Dana's TA2 car where we lost a bolt out of the alternator bracket. And we had to look around. We didn't have extra bolts. We didn't have all this stuff. And talk about, you know, camaraderie. We ended up going through the garage looking for a bolt. Anything they had. And this guy says, hey, I've got a bolt that holds the winch in my trailer. And that might work. And I looked, I said, yeah, that's long enough. It's actually too long. So we took the bolt out. We go outside. They had a garage at the entrance to VIR. We go over there. We get them to cut the bolt. we thread it on in, and we go in the garage, we put it in there, put it all back together, and he's out there running around again. You know, so it's just like talking about full circle stuff where I was getting all the help. I go through the garage here. Now I'm getting help from these guys. And I think that was a, I don't know. I don't think it was SCCA, but it was a NASA group, I believe. So,
yeah,
so
I think
I'm
that that
there
is the
putting it all back together.
That's the heart of racing. I've heard stories about that. I've read stories about, you know, Ralph Earnhardt and Dale, you know, Dale for early days doing stuff like that for people. It's just nice. You know, I like that part of it is that it, you know, I think it was more like that back years ago because it was, you know, it was a family sport. You know, the whole family went to the track. Everybody knew everybody else. A lot of the kids went to school together. It seemed a little tighter than it probably is today just by growth. I mean, not a negative, just the way it was. It seemed like NASCAR back
then. Well, the growth in the technology part of it, you know, the technology,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, you tend to sit more and computate through computers and things like that, where before it was seat of the pants. You know, what's the other guy doing? I can do it that way. You know, it's what you see and what you watch and all that is how you worked on your cars. But let me tell you one, and then we'll get back to the racing side. So all these years, you know, I've worked on race cars and, you know, that's all I've ever done. Well, Dana has gave me the opportunity since he had an old Kyle Petty car. We were talking about Petty.
Oh, wow.
A gentleman donated a road course car to the Chandler School. So I started, he needed some help. And I met Dana and Jan through some other people that I worked with in racing. And I started trying to help him while I was working on his race cars and stuff. And he says, here, you want to try it? Sure. Well, I kind of just took over the cup car. And he said, you're here, you run it. Do what you want with it. And I'm like, wow, this is cool. You know, I've never had a chance just to go out and run as hard as I want to run. And so now I'm 65. I'm going to start working on my driving career.
Oh, that's so cool. You know, it's amazing, too, how many guys I've met that have done that. I mean, you probably know Ray Everham really well. You know,
yep.
He still runs all different types of cars, the most famous one being the Ghost. You know, I think it's cool that, you know, Jeff Gordon jumped back in a car a few years ago, the Porsche series. I mean, it's just kind of cool to see guys doing that. Because in a way, to me, it's full circle. All of us started out racing or wanting to race, and then you go through your career and you come back to where you started.
That's right. Yeah, and here I am. But it's been fun. You know, it's something different, right? I haven't.
This takes you to Charlotte. I know we're jumping around a little bit, but you know, so how does the path lead you to join up with Dale?
So here's, I know I jumped off full circle to current.
No,
to
I
old
love that
and ever,
part of it. This show has no format.
Well, good. I have no rhyme or reason.
I've always said the part that I'm most proud about this show is that Jerry Seinfeld thought he did a show about nothing with Seinfeld. This is a show about truly nothing. We just talk, and wherever the conversation leads us, that's where we go.
So anyhow, so when I was turning 17 driving through Texas, we were on our way to Charlotte. Charlotte being the hub. You know, central located to all the racetracks that, you know, was on the schedule and all that good stuff. So we got here, we left with the hauler and we had a truck pulling a fifth wheel trailer and that was our home. So we got out here, we landed in right in the Charlotte area there. We started working in a shop that we shared with DK Ulrich. When he was over at Charlotte Motor Speedway out there, when DK had a shop and then Buddy Baker ran out of a shop out there with Harry Reneer and Waddell Wilson and them. And it was just right there on the corner. But so we got here and I lived at Frog Creek Campground, and that was inside the Carowinds Park because they had a camper facility there. And that's where home was. So we would drive back and forth from there. We'd come out, work in the shop there, you know, and that's how really everything got started. Until we bought that shop on 8424 Old Statesville Road that we actually had and we used and we ran, you know, when we won the championship and did all that stuff.
So at what point did you join up with Dale? Or did Dale join up with you guys?
Well, Dale kind of came over to us. So we were at Charlotte, and when we did the junior download deal on Becoming Earnhardt.
Oh yeah.
I learned a lot of stuff on that, you know, at the time in those years, you know, I was a mechanic. Mechanics weren't in on all those technical meetings, right? It was just I'd worked on the car and that was it. Well, I was told that Humpy Wheeler knew about Dale Earnhardt. And Dale Earnhardt, Humpy Wheeler was telling Rod Oshelin, said, Rod, you need to hire this guy. And I think at that point, they made the connection. They made a deal. And then in 1978, he ran 5 races for us. And the reason it was 5 is because if you were going to run for Rookie of the Year, you couldn't run over 5 races for the following year. So 78, okay. He ran 5 races with us. And at that time, you know, we were running Dave Marcus and Roland Melodica both.
And as I would say, that was kind of before Dale Earnhardt was known as Dale Earnhardt.
Right, right.
The Intimidator hadn't come along yet.
Oh, no, that wasn't even started yet.
That was way later.
but so 78, he ran the 5 races, and then he got his first full-time ride, and that was in 1979. Obviously,
what car was that?
He was driving the Mike Curb Productions car.
Okay.
That was even before we got Wrangler.
Yeah, that's what I figured. No, yeah, that's why I asked. I was wondering what it was.
Yeah, when we won the championship, it was Mike Curb Productions.
And was that really the first time that you guys, did you kind of notice something in him right off? Because I know you
and him got
really close.
We noticed it in 1978 when he ran those 5 races.
He just stood.
You know, he just jumped in and started rolling with it. I think he sat on the pole, like in the first year in 79, I think he sat on the pole at Riverside one time, and we won our first race in 1979 as a company, which was kind of cool. Another health note. I decided to quit smoking with the first race we won. So I quit smoking in Victory Lane at Bristol in 1979. So I always have that day embedded in my head.
That's kind of funny. So did you kind of tell yourself, hey, if we win the first race we win, I'm quitting?
Yeah. I told the guys, I said, I'm going to quit smoking first race we win. And I haven't touched one since.
Good for you.
But anyhow, now,
it is so
now,
funny
away
how
from
things
the
like
health
you remember.
it's sometimes just kind of the corny stuff. But anyhow, you know, everything and it just moved along. And you know, the whole time then Jake was with us, right? Jake came on board in 79 and we won Rookie of the Year, did all that. You know, 1980, you know, we start out, we're doing good. We're moving along and everything was going well. I mean, we won races and all that. But at one point there, Jake, he just decides to fly the coop, and he did. And, you know, I was always one of the ones that was just right there along with Jake, along with Dale, and listening, talking, what are we going to change? What are we going to do? And that's how I became the crew chief, just like that, overnight.
Did Jake just get burned out, or did he have a better offer, or what happened?
I think Jake had a kind of a reputation of change anyhow.
Oh, okay. So he was kind of,
you know, Holman and Moody, you know, worked with Daryl Waltrip at different times. You know, I'm not quite sure of his true path, right? But he had jumped around quite a bit, and I think something happened. I don't know, between Roland or something happened between Rod or whatever the case may be. He said, I've had enough, gone. Well, we just decided that I'd do it. So, not really knowing what the heck I was probably doing, right? I still wore a radio. I still worked on the car. Except now I talked to Dale and we discussed what we wanted to change. We both discussed it. It wasn't like Dale, we got to run this. How am I going to do that? I've been, 1 year experience. and that's kind of how we rolled with it.
And it had to be kind of, I mean, I'm not trying to speak for you, just of what little I knew him. I'd met him a few times. I was rendezvous a bit. I've worked in branding and sponsorship, and a couple of the companies that I worked for, one was 3M. So I had some exposure to him. And of all the guys I've been around, it felt like he knew every nut, bolt, and screw on the car. I mean, he didn't feel like the typical driver. He definitely felt like he knew and understood the car from the ground up.
And he did, because all his dirt racing that he was doing and stuff like that, you know, he wrenched it. He worked on it. He worked in the shop with his dad.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably grew up working with his dad.
Yeah. And so that was, you know, a lot of the old school guys, that's how they came up. You know, they all worked on their cars. They were running 2-3 times a week. They had to work on them. They had to know what was going on. That's what made Daryl Waltrip so successful. He knew all the parts and pieces, and he comes in, you know what? We need to drop that track bar just a little bit more. He knew what he needed to feel. And just like that 1 year, we won 11, 12 races or something when I was working with him at juniors. It's just phenomenal, you know. So knowing the cars then and now, it's a lot different, you know.
I was going to say, everybody, it has to be a lot different now because, as you said earlier, you know, there's so much data and technology involved in them now. I'm not trying to downplay it, but you know, it was more of a machine, I feel like, back then. And not that it isn't now, but there's just so much technology on them now.
Well, it's advancement. You know, it's like anything. You know, how's Elon Musk send a rocket?
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's better or worse. I'm just saying it's just different, yeah. You know. And
it is, and it's just different ways, right? You use technology to the fullest, so...
Yeah, and
you
look at guys today, and there's a lot of talent out there, you know, Logano, and, you know, there's a lot of guys you look at, and, you know, you got to give credit where credit's due. These guys definitely stand out. I'm not going to put them in Dale's class, and I'm probably a little bit biased there. I mean, I think, like, Dale and Daryl, those guys were, that was, to me, is, you know, I've been a driver, that's a harder race back then. The car, you know, you drove the car. Not that you don't.
Oh, you had to.
But yeah, not that you don't now. And I'm not trying to minimize it. I know there's a lot goes into a race. I know it's demanding. I know these guys work their tail off to get to a championship. But you know, those things were kind of like they were a powerhouse, and you had to drive the car.
Yeah, and a lot of it was too. In the day, the parts and pieces couldn't be run at 100% either.
Sure.
Right? I mean, if you ran as hard as you could run, you'd fail something.
Yeah, exactly.
Or,
right.
Yeah, or it would wear out.
The car was conserving the car, making sure you kept it together to make it through the race.
That's correct. So there was a lot more variations in the drivers than that. You know, now, of course, everybody runs 100% every lap. You know, that's just, and it makes it very, very close because everybody can do that now. So, and then, you know, then the strategies come into play and then when you pit and how soon you pit and just all of that stuff combined. It's a big, big undertaking now. So, but that's technology. It changes it. You just go about it a different way.
So you're, you know, 1980, you're not even 21 yet.
No, I couldn't even go to the bar after practice.
That's so crazy. And you and him
are getting
pretty close.
I'm sorry, say that again.
You and Dale Sr. are getting pretty close.
Yeah.
At this point, you've had quite a few races together. Things are starting to click.
Yeah, you know, and we just had fun, right? I wasn't married at the time. I didn't get married till 1985. But, you know, we bought us a pair of dirt bikes. We would go run through the woods and over pipes and under his dock when the water went down at the lake and just whatever, right? We were, you know, how the old kind of just more careless, carefree. Just do whatever. And that's kind of what it was like back then. We didn't have all that national
exposure. That's one of the things that I always noticed with him. You know, he loved racing, but he also loved his off life, the farm, the fishing, the hunting. You know, it was, you know, he truly enjoyed it all. You know, and I couldn't say he loved one more than the other, but it was kind of cool that he did have such a rounded, you know, he was just as passionate about everything.
Oh, yeah. That's why he ended up with all those big bulldozers and stuff. He had to have a big one. You know?
I know. And the farm.
Many times.
And he loved, you know, I've heard him talk about it. He loved the farm. He loved doing stuff and working on things and doing it himself.
He did. And, you know, that was an escape, too. You know,
I could see that. That had to be, you probably needed that, right? Something to decompress, something to take your mind off of for even a little bit.
Yep. Well, you know, he had his deer shop. You've always heard about the deer shop. It's still there to this day. It hasn't even been stepped in up since he's passed, but that he could go in there and do what he wanted to do and not get chastised on the media side of things. He could go on the farm. Many times when I was there in 95, I started that truck team for Ron Hornaday. And that's when the trucks first started in NASCAR. I built the team for Ron, but several times I'd bring people over and then I'd go to the gate and I'd drive around the property. You had a road going around. We could look at the deer. You could look at the cattle, whatever else he had roaming around. It was like going to a little nature park back here. Which is kind of cool.
Who has it today? Does Teresa still have that or does the family get it?
Teresa, I think is still owns everything out there.
Okay.
Far as I know, everything's still there.
They still have a working farm there now?
I don't know how much they're working the farm aspect of it. Because he had chicken houses and you know, he had his carpenter that always worked.
He had a pretty big operation there.
Yeah, he did. That's a big spread deal. So, especially once he built the Taj Mahal garage there, you know, that was, you know, impressive and still is when you drive by.
And you were
saying impressive.
That the deer garage, nobody's been in there since he passed?
Nope. No.
That's something.
That's what they say. I mean, of course, I haven't been there every day, but that's what they say. No, nobody's been in it. So I've been untouched.
Yeah. You know, it's still something to this day that's tough. You know, it's tough to even think about.
Yeah, I will tell you a little farm story. Him and Neil Bonnet, you know, had a great friendship. Well, Neil had always stocked his little lake with catfish or something. I don't know how that came about, but I just remember going back there at certain times. We'd go back and say, Doug, come on, let's go feed the fish. And we had a little dock, you know, and you'd throw food on that thing and you would think that thing was like full of piranhas. There was so many fish in there just trying to get to that food. And I always thought that was kind of fun. Another one of those weird things you remember, right?
Yeah, it is, you know, it is amazing. So you guys are in 1980. Things start to click. You start moving up. And a few years later, you know, the ownership changes, and that's where Richard comes along.
Yeah, so what happened on that deal and the reason for the split was, and so everything was going along. 80, we win the championship. It's all good. We get Wrangler. They come on board for 81, and we're just moving along, and all of a sudden there's a team meeting, and here comes J.D. Stacy walking in. And they introduce him as the new owner to everyone, including Dale. And it didn't set well with him. Like, nobody said nothing about it, right? It's just like you were a herd of cattle and somebody just sold you and said, here you are. Here's your new owner. And it didn't set well with Dale and all that. So in saying all that, he decided he didn't want to be there no more. So myself, Dale, Rick Peters, Steve Blackwell, and I think one other, we decided we were going to leave and we quit.
Oh, and wow.
That is when we went to Childress's for half the year. In 80, would have been 81. And that's when Childress quit driving because Dale came along. But it was only
really,
for 6 months.
Was that kind of what prompted him to quit driving?
Yes. Yeah, it was Dale coming in. But now in saying all that, there wasn't things in place to keep Dale there from that point on. Because at the end of 81, Dale, that's when he went to go drive for Bud Moore.
Yeah.
Took Wrangler, did all that with him over there. And then I left.
And you guys kind of split for a bit.
I'm sorry?
You split then, because at that point, you went a different route.
I went to Junior Johnson's and started working with Mike Hill and Jeff Hammond with Daryl Waltrip as a driver. I was with Daryl and them there when we had the Pepsi Challenger and the Mountain Dew car. And then we moved, you know, when we progressed, we went to a two-car team. And that's when Neil Bonnet came on board. And then I moved over and became Neil Bonnet's crew chief. And we had the flip-flop color scheme Budweiser cars.
Yeah.
The 11 and the 12. But then, I spent 4 years there with Junior. But then, you know, Dale, he went to Bud Moore's. But from that time, I think Ricky Rudd drove for him. I think some too, with Piedmont. Was it Piedmont Airlines or something like that?
I remember that.
And then I think it was after that is when obviously Dale and Childress must have been talking, because that's when they, you know, gathered up and ended up getting a good wrench sponsorship and stuff like that together. And that's when he came back to Childress's.
So did you ever join up with him again after that?
No. Well,
you guys never really crossed paths again other than friends.
Well, no, I worked for Dale because I started the truck team for Hornaday in 95.
Okay.
I went off and, you know, I did that with them, with, you know, Junior Johnson stuff and I had a spout of, I felt like Jake, you know, they called him Suitcase Jake. So I started moving around. It's like, well, I guess I'm Duffel Bag Doug. I started moving around doing different stuff. And, you know, I ended up back at Dale's. And that's when I worked out of the deer bed shop. That's where we started the team at. And then I was there for, almost a couple years. We won some races there with Hornaday. We were leading the points there. Would have been 96. And then there all of a sudden had to be a change and I got the short straw. So we departed. That's the only team that I ever got gone from leading the points.
Oh, geez.
That's when you.
Was it conflict or financial?
It was conflict, internal. Oh. Some things were rubbed wrong, and, you know, there's a lot more stuff that surrounds a driver than a crew chief. If you got rid of the driver, then you would have had to change postcards and driver uniforms and all that. It was much easier just to get rid of me. And it left a little sour taste in my mouth.
Yeah, that would do that.
But not to say we still were friends.
Yeah.
As my wife told Dale one day when we were over there just walking around his shop and we went in there to take a picture in front of the championship trophy picture that they have hanging in the lobby there. And Dale grabbed Robin, that was my wife, and said, "Are you mad at me?" And she said, "No, I'm just disappointed."
Oh, God. I'll bet that bothered him.
Well, you know, there was a lot of talk. And
he was more sentimental than I think people give him credit for.
Yeah, I mean, no, he don't want to hurt no one. You know,
exactly.
Helps a lot of people that people don't even know about and stuff like that. But, you know, that I wasn't going to hold a grudge. I mean, he was the best man at my wedding.
Yeah, I was going to say you had the most famous best man in history.
And so, you know, I can't complain. We had a lot of good times together. And it was, you know, we always stayed in touch. I mean, we were always still in touch, whether I was working there or not, even after that.
I mean, he was one of those guys, it was hard not to like him. At least, I don't know. I mean, I know you either loved him or you didn't, I guess, but because I have heard people grumble about him. But I will say, I mean, maybe I saw a different part of him or something. But to me, he was one of them guys you got a feeling he'd give his shirt off the back for somebody.
And he did. You know, he helped me at different times with different things. And, you know, not asking for it or anything. It just happened. And
yeah, I mean,
you know,
I imagine it's all perspective. I mean, I'm sure if that black car pulled up behind you on the track, you were about to have a pretty bad day. But
well, that's how he got the Intimidator.
Exactly. But,
right,
you know,
seen him come.
I've never got the impression that it was ever malicious or personal. It was just you're between him and the finish line, and he's there to win.
Right.
And
yeah,
I've said this to people many times. He was a different type of racer, and I think that came from how he started. You know, when he started, it's no secret. He had to win. There was times
right.
when it was, you know, could have been critical if he hadn't won financially. So that puts a different drive to you when you're in that position. And I don't think that ever left him. I don't think, regardless of the net worth or anything else, I think he always drove that way.
Right. It's just like how hard he tried to always win the Daytona 500 and finally did.
Yeah, and that was just strange, wasn't it? I mean, it was like
yeah.
the one thing that kind of eluded him for a long time, which always blew your mind. And not, you know, just fluke stuff, you know, everything from failures to just
getting a flat
out,
going
but
into turn three on the last lap.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the odds?
And then to have it end there is almost, it's like that was
even
just
worse.
Yeah, I really
with one of your with one of your own cars that you own wins the race and he loses his life.
Yeah.
Wow.
In what he you would recognize it better than anyone, a strategy that he set up and orchestrated.
Yep.
To put those two in front of it. And just horrible. And the thing is, and I'm sure you've seen it a million times, I was watching it. We've all seen him wreck. It didn't seem
wouldn't
like
think nothing about it.
Once.
Yeah, it wouldn't. It just didn't even appear to be bad, right?
No. And I mean, I'm not an expert like you are, but I was looking at it thinking more like, oh, shit, would have been cool to have 1, 2, 3, but, you know, at least he got.
Right.
I knew what it meant to him to get those two to the front. You know what I mean? So I knew that was huge. It just sucks that it was so overshadowed. I actually felt really bad for Michael too, because I know that they were close. I mean, that's a hard one too, but I also know that Dale, he wouldn't have been where he was if it wasn't for Dale.
No, and that was a shame, you know, a lot of stuff, you know, did it start a lot of safety work in NASCAR? Absolutely.
Well, you know, it's ironic, you know, I'm pretty good friends with Ryan Newman, and Ryan was part of that committee, and, you know, and he's very quick to tell you this, it's not anything that he orchestrated, but one of the things that he was involved in from Dale's accident actually saved his life in his accident. And it was the Newman bar overhead.
Right. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I agree.
It's kind of funny. And that was, you know, on a personal story, I don't watch too many of them. I'll go back and watch the recap, but I saw Dale, and then I was watching when Ryan, you know, had his accident, and that was the last one I really watched live, because I just thought I can't do this. I mean, you know these guys, and to watch that happen, scared. I mean, with Ryan, it looked bad.
Oh gosh, yeah, especially getting hit.
That was
back,
one of the most
too.
Horrific wrecks I've seen somebody come out
yeah.
of okay. Well, I mean, other one is probably Michael Waltrip's wreck, that famous one where he clips the guardrail, takes the car in half.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, and then have the other driver that did almost exactly the same thing. I forget his name now. But when you talk about wrecks, it's just. The ones that stand out to me, Jeff Bodine and the truck that went through the fencing on the front straightaway there, that was bad. And then Dylan's
and Ray Everham did that with I know I'll butcher this. It wasn't an outlaw car, but it was kind of like that. But he had one like that. His real bad accident went through and flew off the track.
I didn't know that. Huh. Yeah, we were sort of involved with that one. I was with, when I was with BK Racing, we had, Matt DiBenedetto, and he was driving the 83 car, and that wreck with Dylan, when he went up and got in the fence and the motor came out.
Oh gosh.
When I got back to the shop, the top halo bar at the top of the windshield was sliced open where that motor went over the top of that car.
Wow.
I mean, a little lower coming in the window, right? It was just thinking about stuff like that and seeing it, and then thinking like, oh my God, what if that was 3 inches lower? It would have went to the bottom side of that bar and would have been in his lap.
Well, and you think even back on some of Dale's previous wrecks, there was a few of those that were far more scary.
You look at the Rusty Wallaces, the Darrell Waltrips, even. when Daryl's arm was hanging out the top of the cage at Daytona? I don't know if you remember that one.
Yeah, I do.
I think that was in the 90s. Rusty Wallace, I think, had the bad one at Talladega. Flipping and all that. I don't know. There's a lot. There's few that just stand out in my mind, like those that you're just flip, 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 flip. And then the current one, was it the 14 car Grand Prix? At Daytona? That was big. And he walks away. It's just crazy.
No, it's definitely come a long way. And you know what? I really credit, I mean, all these committees and then guys like you. I mean, there's so many crew chiefs that have contributed to advancements in the sport, not just mechanically, but safety wise. It really is one of the cool things about the industry is that it does continue to evolve. And it is one of those things where it's, you'd like to think it's safer today than it's ever been. Probably is. You know, it seems
like.
Yeah, but
I think in a lot of ways. And they're still changing stuff all the time. You know, that new car was just too stiff when it came out. And they just totally all the time changing something. Because little wrecks like Kurt Busch, for instance, at Pocono.
Yeah.
That's almost a career ending slide.
Well, I think it basically was. It seems like he really never came back from that.
No. But did I not read right that isn't he going to be in the Daytona 500 trying?
Yeah, I did read that. So, I mean, it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
everybody always wants to come
back.
No, I think
that's great. I mean, I like to see, it's just like Dale Jr. I think it's cool that he still jumps in a car a few times a year. Although he's young. I don't see him as like one of the real senior guys. But I mean, it is cool to see guys still get out there. One of the ones that I'd love to see more of, and you probably would agree, would be Cary Earnhardt. I always thought he was, and I've had him on this show. I always thought he was a really good driver.
Well, you know, I think it's like anybody. You got to have all the right breaks.
Exactly. No, everything's got to, there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle, right? And also, you've got to, Cary had a family. I think it was hard. You know, it's just timing. I think it's a combination of you have to have all the pieces and you have to have the timing in your own life. And yeah, I can't say it's right or wrong. I mean, Cary's done very well. He's a tremendous guy. You know, I just think the world of him. It's more of a selfish reason that I'd love to see him drive because I always thought he was a really good driver. My personal opinion, you'd know more than I would, but I never felt like it was any lack of his talent. I felt like it was more like he just didn't want to. Like he had kind of wanted to pursue other things and because he was a good driver. And I think a lot of people could see that because I've heard other people say the same thing. They'd love to see him. He seems to have a little bit of that, you know, not just physically, but there is something to him that reminded me of Dale.
Well, I was getting ready to say that Cary would be one of the guys, if you look across the garage area, side view, wearing a pair of gargoyles.
Oh, yeah.
You would say that was Dale standing there.
Oh, no, there's no question. I look at him, and it's almost eerie. I mean, he's Dale. Anybody, also, I've heard people say, and I've actually said this, people say, I wonder what Dale would look like now. Let's look at Cary.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
What Dale would look like now.
But what's funny about Cary, I mean, not funny, but with Cary, he's got a lot of the same temperament, you know, the personality trait, the wittiness,
you. And I don't know him obviously as well as you do, but I was fortunate enough that he did this show and I got to talk to him. And then we know a lot of mutual people together, the same people. I feel like he is a lot like his dad, but better. Like he's got the same temperament, same drive, same wittiness, same super sharp, and a little softer, a little nicer. I don't mean soft in a bad way. I mean soft in a good way, like good person. And not that Dale wasn't, but Dale was in a different position. You know, he was still fighting to grow and build something for his kids. And, you know, it was a different situation. But
I agree.
He's an interesting guy. You know, you see a little bit of it with his son, Jeffrey, too. I think Jeffrey's a good driver.
Yep. He's got a lot of the looks, too.
Yeah.
I worked with Kerry, too.
He can definitely tell he's an Earnhardt, but Kerry, oh my gosh, he's definitely, you know, I like it. I smile every time I see him because, you know, I've always looked up to Dale. I've always thought the world of him, and it's cool to see his family continue. I love to see what Dale Jr. and Kelly are doing. I like seeing what Jeffrey's doing. I just think, I hope somewhere, someplace, Dale's able to look down and see this and smile.
Yeah, and still be happy that the legacy and is still carrying on. And with, you know, Dale Jr. and his interest in the old days, right? How was it? What was it like? What did they do? What were they thinking? I like listening to that stuff as he digs into it.
I do too. I love that stuff. That's part of what inspired this show, was I like going back and kind of talking to guys and hearing how it really was and what brought him into it. You know, what how it really evolved. The story behind the story.
Yeah, that's,
you touched on it, but I do think that's another point too. What Dale Junior and Kelly are doing is just amazing. I mean, he has built such a phenomenal company, and he's such a nice guy. And he's just one of those guys that I think is better for the sport. Like he gets along with everybody. He seems to do so much to help further things. It's just a really good guy and super smart. I mean, he just seems like he sees things and gently kind of guides his way through it.
And it's all that stuff's interesting. So
yeah, it really is.
You know, it's neat to talk about it.
It is fun to talk about it. So what are you doing today? What are you into these days? Talk a little bit about your drive and what else you're working on.
Well, you know, I've got some welders and stuff in my garage and sandblaster. I've been doing some powder coating, done a few sets of wheels for people. We're kind of trying to get that going a little bit. I built my own oven. And I don't know. I've always been one of the people I like to get all my own stuff so I can do it when I want to do it. And I've done that now, and it's starting to pick up a little bit. We're getting a little here and there. I've got a laser, a CO2 laser that making trinkets and acrylic, night light type things. And, it's got a website going. It's called Fastwood.
What's your website?
It's fastwoodcustoms.com.
Are you guys in Mooresville or where are you at?
Yep, I live in Mooresville in the same house now, almost 39 years, I think.
So that's backwoodcustoms.com?
Yes.
Definitely worth checking out for everybody. And you're involved with
kind of
Dana Blackhurst School, the Chandler
stuff.
School.
It's a lot of different stuff, metal yard art to live edge wooden tables to acrylic signs, wood signs, metal art stuff cut with the laser, then powder coated. I've got flags on there. You know, just an assorted stuff, right?
So I have to ask, talking about unassorted stuff, and for anybody who's just joining us, we're with Doug Richard. It is backwoodscustoms.com is his website. What is the coolest piece of history that you have? Guys that have come through this, the one thing I've always seen is everybody picked up things along the way. What is it that you've kept that is like your, the one thing that you look at, or one of many things you look at that makes you smile?
Oh, man. You know, I've got a lot of stuff, you know, just from the years, right? But
sure.
As far as something that you, I guess when we all did the exhibition thing at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, I was with Daryl Waltrip at the time, and they arranged that deal to have, I don't know, Rusty Wall and several people go there for like a little exhibition deal, and it was NASCAR first time on historic Indianapolis Motor Speedway, never been done, da 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 da. So when we went there, I got a inaugural Indy test deal shirt, and I had every driver that was driving there sign it, and then I put it into a frame, and I have it on the wall in the office. But also, you know, Indianapolis went through their transformation too when they went from bricks to asphalt. Well, I happened to find, as walking down pit road, at the end of pit road, I found a piece of the original bricks from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Oh, wow.
And I think I have them in my attic.
That's so funny.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe there'd be more exciting things than that, but it just, you know, that's what stands out. Of course, I've got my championship belt buckle and that kind of stuff, you know.
Some of the rings and all that. Rings. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
No, that's kind of like, I think that stuff is so cool, and I'm the same way. I've been kind of a pack rat. I'm kind of going the other way. I've kept stuff all over the years. I think one of my favorites is I have the Goodwrench No. 3, the black, white, and red swoosh hat of Dale's, not of Dale's, but of the team hat from that era, and hangs in my office.
But, yeah, I tell you what I did not long ago was all through the years, you know, in talking with Dale and all that, I ended up with the Craftsman Pit Crew trophy when we won the championship. We won the Craftsman Pit Crew too. So I had the trophy over here. And Dale always said and told Robin that if anything ever happens to Doug, I want that back. Right? So, of course, we lost Dale before me. And I thought it would just be appropriate to give that to Dale Jr. So I did.
Oh, you took it when you did his show?
Yeah. I gave him,
oh, that's so
I gave
cool.
him that to have. But I also, when I had bought Dale's dirt car to run at Metrolina Speedway, and we got it ready to go and all that, and I didn't have a uniform. So Dale gave me one of his, one of the early generic, had Firestone on the back, and it had his name on it, and that was about it. So I had that ever since then. That was in the 80s, because I remember, this is kind of funny. The first race I ever drove, I went to drive his car at Metrolina Speedway. And it was during the Martinsville race. So we're there practicing. And me and Dale,
Bobby Allison, jump in Bobby's airplane, fly to Charlotte, get out, go to the racetrack. Guys that I worked with at the team got the car, took it to the track. I went out there, drove the car. I ended up running over my own bumper after I hit the wall and knocked it off. And and we loaded back up in the airplane and flew back to Martinsville. But that was also the first time I ever did a roll in an airplane was with Bobby Allison.
Really?
Yeah. Another one of those little things that always pops up when someone talks about it. But I also gave Dale Jr. that uniform that I had. Just for the fact that, I mean, I'm 65 now. I just didn't want it to go to the wrong place. And I knew when I sent him a picture of it one night, me and Robin was going through some stuff and I ran across the uniform. I took a picture of it, of me holding it up and showed his name on it. I sent it to Dale Jr. And I bet it wasn't 15 seconds later, Jr. sent me a picture of Dale standing next to a late model car with that uniform on.
Wow.
But that's just Dale Jr. in his history, right?
Yeah, no, and that's something that's always been amazing. And I love that he liked that. I like that, you know, several of his things he's done. Another thing I've always liked is his graveyard that he finds, keeps, and holds on to some of those old cars. I think that's cool.
Yeah, you know, I've never really toured all the old car part of it. I just hadn't had the opportunity to do it or nothing like that. I've been over there, but for a different event in the little town. Because how I met my wife was, my wife Robin was working with Shauna Robinson.
So, oh wow,
Shauna Robinson was involved with Dale Jr. in creating the town. And then when Sherry Pollock passed away, they had the memory, you know, thing that they put together, and they had it over there in the little town because I built a cedar box for them for all these things that people can sign. It's like a Jenga set almost. And people that came to that event, instead of signing the guest book, they could sign the pieces of wood. And then those pieces of wood were put in the box that I built, and then they were given to the family. And it was,
oh, that's really cool.
Had the signatures and notes of whatever for that. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, that's how I met my wife, was through Shauna. So.
That's so funny. And another tidbit to that, I read where you guys actually waited and scheduled the wedding till after the season so that Dale could stand up with you.
Yeah. Yeah. He said he wanted to do it. I didn't have to ask him. He said, I'm going to be your best man. Okay.
That's pretty cool. Which will tell you what you meant to him, because, you know, he was kind of one of those guys where he'd do anything for the people he cared about, but you know, you knew where you stood with him.
Oh yeah. I'll tell you a little story on that one. So we got married December 21st, and it was right at Christmas time, of course, crowded rows and all the way down in Charlotte to when we got married and all that stuff. So at the time of the wedding was supposed to start, the only people out there in the pews was our group, Dale, Teresa, Junior, and Flossie. And then how did I get to the wedding? I borrowed Junior and Flossie's car to leave.
Oh, that's funny.
They gave me their car so I could leave.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah, another
another marriage story.
I love those stories. You want to hear another Dale? You might know this story too. So I don't know the exact date, race, whatever, or even series. But back when Ray Everham was driving, way back before crew chief days, he either didn't have or couldn't afford, I don't know what the story was, but he needed a fire suit. He went to Dale in the garage and he said, "Hey, I really need a fire suit. Do you have an old one I could buy?" And he said, "What are you going to do with it? So I'm going to wear it." He said, "I got one you can have." So he gave him one and it had Dale's name on it. I don't know if he didn't have the money or if he had the foresight or what it was, but he didn't take Dale's name off. He had a patch made with his name and put it over Dale's name, went racing. Today, that fire suit hangs in his office, and it's got the Ray Everham partially peeled off, and you can see the Dale Earnhardt underneath it. And it's so cool.
That's cool, though. Yeah.
That is cool. I mean, I thought that was just, I mean, it's funny. When I met Ray, I was in his office several times, and he showed me around. Of all the cars, of all the helmets, of the rainbow car sitting there, all that stuff. And not that that stuff isn't cool. That was the one thing that I just stood and stared at. It was just like, wow. That's like,
I know.
You know,
hey,
felt like
all,
Indiana Jones
that's
looking
it's
at
all
the
about
arc.
The memory. Right?
It
you
is.
Got to know the whole
about,
story behind it
also,
to know exactly
to me, it was like
what it
cool
means.
Cool, because it was like, you know, one racer helping another, you know, kind of was where it took you back. You know, I mean, he didn't want anything. He just wanted to help somebody else out.
It's all about the story.
Absolutely. Well, Doug, I appreciate you joining us. We're going to have to wrap it up here, but I'd love to have you back again. I mean, there's a million stories and I could talk to you all day long. I can't thank you enough for taking the time. I know we've taken a little bit of your time. For anybody that wants to check out what Doug's doing today, it's called backwoodscustoms.com. Take some time
no,
to take
fast
a look
wood.
At it. Sorry?
It's Fastwood, F-A-S-T.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Fastwood Customs.
Fastwood Customs. I had to try to introduce my racing career with wood. So I've been running fast with race cars and I'm making wood products.
So it's Fast Wood Customs for people who want to look it up, and we'll put it out on social media. And then, you know, take a minute and look up the Chandler School, Dana Blackhurst School that Doug's working with. You know, I always tell people, you know, we got to help those that can't help themselves. And if you can't do a lot, do what you can. The other organization that we always support here is No Fallen Heroes. If you get a chance, take a look at it. No Fallen Heroes was started by a Top Gun pilot, Matt Wiz Buckley. And they do a tremendous job helping veterans, trying to prevent veteran suicide. He's definitely making a difference in anything we can do to help them. OldFriendsEquine.org for thoroughbred racehorses that need a place to retire. They're the best in the business. If you're ever near Lexington, Kentucky, take your family. Take some time. It's definitely worth the trip. And if you own a company or have employees, I guarantee you have healthcare issues. So if you need help with your benefit, there's nobody better in the business than MB Gray. Check out mbgrayhealthcare.com. And we are supported by ROCTournaments.com. Take a minute and look them up. They do a lot for a lot of people, including No Fallen Heroes. So we appreciate them. But Doug, we appreciate you. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been an honor. And I really appreciate you sharing the stories. It's always fun.
Well, I'm sorry it took so long, but I'm glad we finally did it. And I hope everybody out there has a great new year this year. That's what we need to have.
I do too.
Hopefully a lot of change and everything is good.
I get down to Mooresville on occasion. I'll give you a bump and love to shake your hand.
All right, buddy. Yes, definitely do that. Thank you,
guys. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. If you're in New York, go to King & Berto's. if you're in Miami, go to the Palm, our second home. And thank you for taking the time to listen to us today. This has been Hollywood and Horsepower. We'll see you guys again next week. Thank you.